Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, December 10th. I'm Ray Graff. Time to talk car maintenance and repair with Gordon Fricke. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. You got a car question? We welcome it right now. Do it before it gets too crowded. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Get in the queue, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. The number again is 800-348-2551. The one, the only, Gordon Fricke, and your car calls coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On the program today to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions is Gordon Fricke, who owns and operates Barber and Fricke Automotive, an independent repair, towing, and used car facility in lovely Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for 30 years or more. I'm not asking for the exact number. If you have a question for Gordon Fricke, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Mr. Gordon Fricke, you're in person.
Person, Ray, yes. Decided to end the year with a live show. It's like our Christmas special here today.
Okay, so we should light a fire and have some eggnog and sing a few tunes?
Yeah, maybe a little brandy in the eggnog, or what do you put in it, rum? I don't know.
Okay, well, it's a marshmallow world. Okay, anything going on that you want to discuss? We have a stack of emails already, and the lines are loading up.
Well, you know, we usually don't talk about trucks.
No.
But the heavy-duty trucking industry is still a little wacky, and the international brand has such massive backup still, which I don't quite understand anymore, how you can have to order a truck, spec it out, and then wait a year to 18 months to get this truck. I mean, these shortages are still occurring in nooks and crannies of the automotive industry.
Why?
I don't know. I mean, they're still blaming supply chains and certain components coming from other countries and manpower. And I just thought that was kind of getting solved. But
so you're talking about the trucks that pull the big tractor
trucks. Big trucks, snow plows, medium-duty, heavy-duty trucks, dump trucks, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
How much does one, if I wanted to go into the trucking industry and haul an 18-wheeler, how much does one of those trucks cost?
You mean just the front end that pulls the trailer?
Yeah.
I think you could pretty easily spend $200,000 or $300,000, maybe more.
Yikes. So how many years would it take as a long-haul trucker to get that money back?
You can have a lot of money rolling down the highway. You know, then you get the big truck with the sleeper cab, and if you have your own trailer and all the stuff that goes with it, insurance, licenses, everything.
I mean, I got to tell you, I was driving, the wife and I were driving this weekend. We went out and on a little road trip. The song Convoy came up. Remember Convoy?
I do.
Them truckers roll, 10-4.
Yeah. In fact, when I talked to you today, you gave me like a trucker, I think you said 10-4 good buddy or something like that. So it's got to be on your brain.
We got a convoy going on here. All right, let's get to the emails. One is very short, one is very long, and then I'll go to my phone where a lot have come in already. This one came in at 7:16 this morning from Tom in Gardner, Mass. Check engine light came on. First scanner indicated O2 sensor. Second scanner indicated catalytic problem. My mechanic changed the air filter. No more engine light. So far, so good.
Well, two things. Maybe not enough time has passed since the repair and or resetting the system, clearing the light.
Right.
You know, because the computer has to go back through there and start rerunning all of the tests that give it a green light or a red light, and that turns on the check engine light. But maybe it was a severely plugged air filter from maybe like a rodent nest or something really bad.
Yeah.
Time will tell if the light stays off.
Okay. This now is a very long email. And I wouldn't ordinarily read one that is 12 paragraphs. But Suzanne wrote this on Sunday, November 3rd, and I missed it. I just saw it today. So here we go, Suzanne. This one's for you. And if you're writing, excuse me, please try not to write emails quite this long. Hello, Gordon, says Suzanne. I have a 2014 Subaru Outback. I keep it in tip-top shape. Last year and now this year, my oil light came on. This time, I was in a remote area swimming. The dipstick was not showing any signs that it was touching oil, so I did not want to drive. I got someone to drive me to a place where they sold oil. I had called my Subaru service manager, trustworthy fellow, and said to buy a thick oil, 10W30, slowly put in a quart, don't overfill, drive to them, and he would look at it. I did. He checked the PVC valve, looked underneath to see if a leak, and not sure what else. He saw no signs of a leak. He told me to look out for oil spots in the garage, which I did not have any. He said to come back in 1,200 miles. In 1,200 miles, I went back to get my service, which included an oil change. At the time, he again made a thorough check of why the light was coming on, and we were down a whole quart of oil. Then he said, come back in another 1,000 miles, and we'll do an oil combustion test. I'm scheduled to do it this week. In the meantime, my friend, who's a car mechanical geek, said around that year, Outbacks were having a problem with the pistons and oil. My interpretation of what he said may not be accurate. And if you had an oil leak, it was not leaking onto your driveway or garage, but going through the pistons and out the exhaust or something like that. He believes Subaru corrected this piston problem after the 2014 Subaru, but wasn't positive. I'm asking you, before my appointment, well, it's a little late now, Suzanne, I'm sorry, with Subaru this week, what dialogue should I have with them about this oil problem? I don't feel safe traveling to especially remote places with a car that cannot be driven if the oil light comes on. I'm carrying that heavy oil, a quart, with me now. Second question, do you agree to switch to this heavier oil? All right, I'm going to take a short nap while you answer that.
Is it break time yet? Oh, no. Yes. So that is a major concern in today's automotive world, okay. Oil consumption.
Yep.
All cars consume oil, some more than others. Most of the manufacturers are now saying it is acceptable to consume a quart of oil for every 1,000 to 1,200 miles,
yeah.
Roughly in that range. And I think the service manager was asking her to come in at about those periods of time. So he already had that on his mind.
Okay.
That series Subaru, yes, they had a lot of oil consumption issues. And the correction was, as her mechanic friend stated, an updated set of pistons and rings. Mm. It's widespread. It's all over the industry. Some cars get using so much oil that the manufacturer will warranty it and solve the problem or calm it down. It's not the end of the world. It's just a new world with oil consumption. And a lot of people carry a quart with them at all times.
I have one in my truck,
yeah,
too.
I mean, everybody used to do it, and then it stopped happening, and now it's happening again. Subaru will do an oil consumption analysis on that car. They're going to change the oil. They're going to put paint marks on the drain plug so nobody drained oil out of it. And although the car may be too old for any assistance from the factory.
You know, I think I might have brought this up before. Usually I complain about something. When you check your oil, why do some manufacturers, including the manufacturer of my car, make the dipstick black? I can't see the oil.
I know.
And I have no, my eyes aren't that great anyway.
Yeah.
And then I have no idea.
Yeah, it's true. I've had the opposite occur, too, where the dipstick is almost the same color as the oil, and when the oil is fresh and clean, you have a really hard time seeing where it is. So you've got to pull it out and level the stick so it doesn't run down it or towards the handle and get it under the right light, and you can see that beginning of the oil so you're accurately reading it.
But here's the thing. Sometimes you need to check this in not optimum conditions,
yes.
And then it's, what do you do?
I know, and I've had people panic and put way too much oil in cars. They've come in 3 quarts too full because they said, I kept adding oil and I can't see it on the stick. And I said, well, now you got like 9 quarts in the car. We got to drain it off, you know?
All right, one more email here, or maybe two, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. Gordon Fricke's our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Sam in Cornwallville, New York says, I have a 2006 Pontiac Vibe. I've heard anecdotal evidence to hold on to this car as they last forever. However, it has a pervasive problem with a leak at the exhaust manifold, likely at the flange connection. My mechanic said he's unable to get a new exhaust manifold. Is it worth it to keep this dirty car? And that's from Sam in Cornwallville, New York.
Yeah, well, they were good cars because they were a Toyota product.
Really? A Pontiac?
I think the Vibe and the Matrix were Toyota products. I could be wrong on the Vibe, but if that manifold is now unattainable, it's only going to get worse, and you're living with an exhaust leak. So what do? It may be curtains for the car if it's that bad.
That's weird, though. I mean, I know I had a 90.5 Ford Mustang GT that was a Mazda engine. What's up with that?
Ford and Mazda were together for a long time. They had a Ford had a pretty good stake in the company.
Yeah.
I think they still may have some, but Mazda's a good independent, very, very good brand of automobile.
That was a great car,
by the way. They're a best kept secret.
All right. One more email, then we'll take a break. Gordon Fricke's our guest. This is from, I don't know, it doesn't say. I have an annoying belt squeak on a 1989 Corvette. I replaced the belt tensioner. All of the pulleys appear to be in line. I tried belt dressing, which makes it stop for about an hour, but then it's back. No idea how to get rid of this.
That's not uncommon, and sometimes it is just the way the belt was made.
Oh, a new belt?
I would just go get another belt, and if it wasn't very long ago, if it was from a good supplier, an auto parts store, they will warranty that belt for you. Oh. You're going to just say, hey, look, I got a noise complaint with this belt. Can you give me another one for free for a warranty?
So
try another belt. Maybe manufacturing issue.
All right, let's take a break. Gordon Fricke's our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll hit the phones in a minute. From the old Manic soundtrack, there's Turn Every Stone, Lalo Schifrin on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's almost said it's the gardening show. No, that's not going to happen for a while. It's Gordon Fricke's show, and it's cars. And let's begin in Slingerlands. Hello, Mark. You're on.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a big fan of the show. How you doing, Gordon?
Good.
So I got a question for you guys. I have a 2013 Honda CR-V, which is in great condition. It's got about 100,000 miles, but I've always done the maintenance on it. I got a newer battery probably about, 8 or 9 months ago, and we've done multiple checks on this battery, and everything always comes back fine. But for some reason, it's dying on me over and over and over again. A lot of the times, if I just turn the car on the accessories, you know, just a light in the radio, if I leave that running for a minute, it'll kill the whole battery. So I have to jump it constantly. I've done some research online. I'm not sure if there's a draw on the battery or if there's anything maybe you would recommend. At this point, I might just replace it entirely. But I've brought it to dealerships, and they keep saying, oh, the battery seems fine to me. So there's some sort of draw on the car. I'm wondering if you had any advice.
Well, if you leave is this car driven daily?
Yeah.
Okay. So do you ever have any concern starting it, particularly on a cold morning, like you're thinking, oh, boy, it's not cranking very fast. I hope it starts. Or does it spin over normally anytime you go to start it?
Most of the time, I would say it feels okay. I mean, it's more of a psychological thing now. I'm just like, oh, I hope it starts. But right. I don't think it's really, you know, kicking and then starting. It seems to start okay.
Yeah. So years ago, the standard test for a battery was what was called a load test, and you actually subjected that battery to a heavy, heavy load, like starting 5 CRV engines at zero. Most of today's shops and dealerships use an electronic tester, which doesn't put a load on the battery. It does an electronic test as to what it thinks the battery has for capacity. And I have been through your scenario a lot of times where the customer has a concern. It feels like a bad battery, smells like a bad battery, but it tests fine on the electronic tester. If I go get my old-fashioned load tester, it will usually wipe it out in one test, and it condemns the battery. So I would go to a shop that has a traditional load tester and see if you can get an additional load test on the battery, and it'll probably fail it. And I'm thinking if your battery's only 8 months old, you will be eligible for free replacement.
Uh-huh.
Where did you get the battery?
I believe it was a AAA battery, actually.
Okay.
I think I am eligible for replacement of that.
Yeah, that battery's definitely going to have at least 2 years free replacement, maybe three. Maybe AAA has that. I don't think they have any load testers, but I bet you they would be more positioned to warranty that without a lot of, you know, monkeying around. It sounds to me like you might have a weak battery.
All right, Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it very much. So a load tester, what's that, just a strong resistor?
Yeah, exactly. It's actually called a carbon pile, and it's a stack of carbon. And when you hook the battery up to this machine, you turn a dial, and it pushes the carbon together and creates a load. The tighter you squeeze the handle, the more current it demands from the battery. It's a fantastic tester, and it's kind of gone by the wayside in today's electronic world.
All right, let's go to Niskayuna. Dave, you're on.
Hi, Ray, and hi, Gordon. This is Dave.
Hi.
It's funny about the carbon pile tester you were talking about, because I have one down in my workshop. Which I use about every 5 years, but it is nice to have around, and it does a great test on the battery.
Can we send that
anyway,
last guy over and have you test his battery?
I don't know if that's a good idea.
Do it for free.
All right, go
anyway,
ahead, Dave.
Anyway, I'm calling because Gordon is such an expert on Volkswagens and Audis.
Yep.
I've got a 2001 VW Passat with a 2.8-liter V6 Audi engine in it, and it's got almost 200,000 miles on it. Runs like a champ. My wife and I were driving back down the Mass Pike in September, and we're going up one of those big hills. And all of a sudden, the car made this gigundous thud, and the whole thing shook. And then it went on running okay, but the engine revs were way up.
Oh,
so
boy.
I pulled off at the nearest rest stop, which was only a couple miles. Looked at it. No, nothing coming out the bottom of the car, nothing leaking out the bottom. Car seemed to, engine ran okay. So I said, I think we can make it home, honey. So we limped home for the next 60 miles in the only gear the transmission had left, which was third gear. It's a Tiptronic transmission. So at third gear, we were running about 5,000 RPM all the way home.
Yep.
And it actually has two gears left. It has third, and it has reverse.
I'm so not laughing at you, but car, it's
is there any way to get this car out of third gear?
Well, what happened is the transmission went into limp-in mode. Limp mode.
Oh, right. I read about that.
Yeah. If it suffers some type of a problem, whether it be mechanical or electronic, it will go fail-safe, and you'll get two speeds, like you said, and it may do like a little miniature double shift. It may go second, third, but it'll let you get home. But it's also, when you start out from a dead stop, it strains the engine because you're geared way too high.
Yeah.
Fortunately, it's automatic with the Tiptronic, so the torque converter just takes up the slack, and the engine revs up, and it slowly gets moving.
Yeah, exactly. What it needs to be scanned. With European software, and sometimes the transmission can go back. You can clear that and get it out of limp mode. It may be curtains for the transmission, and or it may be an intermittent thing, and it may not come out of limp mode unless you command it. So I make a long story short. It needs to go to a shop that has the software to read the transmission data and codes.
You can't get that in a box auto parts store?
Well, I've got a VagCom at home, which will get into, I think, the lowest level. I just haven't used it yet.
Well, I would try it. Why not? Plug it in and see what it does. But you need to see what you have in there for transmission codes. Could be an external cause. So get it diagnosed or scanned and see if it'll come out of limp mode and drive again just for kicks and
What do you
see.
Mean an external cause?
Well, like a sensor, a speed sensor, or something not internal to the transmission, something on the outside. Yeah.
All right, Dave, thanks a lot. Good luck. Let's go to Utica. Greg, you're on.
Gentlemen, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
So we have a 22 Tiguan that we took to a dealership because it wasn't running right, couldn't get over 20 miles an hour or so. Diagnosis was a bad cylinder head, and Volkswagen said they would warranty the repair. This was the beginning of August of this year. We're still waiting for a cylinder head. So my question to Gordon is this normal, abnormal, to wait this long, and is there any recourse that I have?
Well, it's funny. Ray and I were talking earlier about shortages in the heavy, medium-duty, heavy trucking world, and I guess there are still shortages out there for other components. The cylinder head has a lot of things in it, so I'm not sure what has failed in your vehicle to need the head, but obviously the dealer at this stage of car repair, they don't do unit repairs anymore. They just do major component swaps. Mm. So that cylinder head, I'm very surprised that they can't allocate one in this amount of time. And are you under warranty?
So we have an extended warranty, and Volkswagen is honoring that. They said, yes, there's a $250 deductible, but after that, you are covered for the repair. And they did say that the cylinder head or whatever components go along with it, it's on national back order. And I've spoken with other VW dealerships that confirm the same thing. We are one of four Tiguans at this particular dealership that's waiting for the same part.
Okay. So they've got a pattern failure here that is affecting a lot of cars. So VW can't keep up with the demand for these cylinder heads. I don't think you have any recourse other than you could always reach out to. So the dealership has ordered a factory Volkswagen part. Is that correct?
Yeah, they wouldn't allow a non-VW part.
No. Right? The only thing you could do is reach out to Volkswagen of America corporate. And they're just going to probably recite to you everything the dealer has, that they're very sorry that they're running out of these parts, that can't get them from their vendor quick enough. Be interesting to find out if they could tell you what the failure is, or maybe the dealer has told you what's gone wrong in there. But I don't think there's much you can do other than wait it out.
Sorry, Greg. Thanks for the call. Diane in Pittsfield writes, I have a 2018 BMW X1 with about 28,000 miles. Car's running fine. It's due for an annual oil change and inspection. The dealer recommends new plugs, noting that this is often done at the sixth service or 60,000 miles. At 28,000 miles, can I wait on this without creating a problem? And that's from Diane.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's the old time versus mileage maintenance concern.
Yeah.
The miles are so low, and spark plugs hold up so well for so long, really probably doesn't need those spark plugs yet. Really don't think so.
Are plugs expensive nowadays?
Yeah, they are. They've gone from days of your 65 Le Mans costing about 67 cents a spark plug.
Easy to put them in.
Easy to put
them
in. Fun afternoon with the guys, right?
Yeah.
Take you an hour. Now, spark plugs, in some cases, I'm seeing them $30 a piece.
Wow.
$28 a piece.
Yikes.
$14. The prices are all over the place.
That's crazy talk.
And the labor can be insane on some vehicles. Not on this BMW, but some cars, it's horrible.
Okay. Let's see. Okay. We're going to go over to Westford, New York, and it's Greg's turn. Greg, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hey, guys. Hey, Ray. Great show as usual. I wonder if you ever consider doing a music show one afternoon.
I love
doing your favorite.
I used to do a jazz show on 11 o'clock at night here, but I didn't stay all day, so I recorded it, and it turned out I just couldn't get everything done in a day, and so I finally gave that up. But, yeah, I'd love to.
You're a great broadcaster.
Thanks a lot.
Gordon, I got a 1998 GMC Sierra 2500 pickup truck just for up around the country. Got about 150,000 on it. It starts right up in the mornings, or if it's been sitting a while, starts right up. Then if you're out and it's maybe still a little warm, it hesitates, struggles to kick over. Maybe I can smell a little gasoline as well, like it's a little rich, flooding a little bit. But eventually start, maybe after 6 seconds, maybe under 10 seconds. So got these local guys. One guy's like, oh, that's a crank sensor that's doing that. That was a guy at a Monroe tire place. And then another local guy who knows the truck said, no, that's your spider, your fuel injector spider. Has to be replaced without even looking at it. So in the meantime, I bought a bottle of fuel injection cleaner, dumped that in, and it's only been overnight, so I'm not sure. But I was just wondering what you might think.
Yeah,
you got to drive it. Don't you have to drive it when you pour that stuff in?
Yeah. So that spider was definitely a problem in that era. And what it was is it had one big injector that fed little teeny nozzles throughout the intake manifold. So it looked like a spider upside down. Mm-hmm. Susceptible to deposits from bad fuel sitting around, a lot of age, not very many miles. Definitely do the fuel treatment that you're referring to. Use a good, strong brand, a 20-ounce bottle. But like Ray said, you've got to drive it to make that stuff work. And spirited driving is advisable. I don't know if you can do that on a GMC 2500, but it needs to do more than just idling around or local use. It needs to be really, you know, kind of hammered a little bit.
Wait a minute. Now, you don't want him to exceed the speed limit in any way, right?
Not. Well, it depends. If it's a valid if you have the a license to speed, you can, right?
But, officer, I was cleaning my fuel injectors. I don't think that'll work. Yeah. I don't know, man.
I would definitely start there. The crank sensor, that was problems with those trucks, but you would almost always have a check engine light, and you'd have very hard cranking, sometimes like the engine was seizing. You'd have evidence usually as a check engine light or data that says the crank sensor's failing. So, and that's an easy thing to change, but there's a strange procedure. Once you change it, you almost blow the engine up when you do it. So I'd be really careful there. But, yeah, I mean, this far away, not seeing or hearing it, I would definitely do the fuel treatment first.
I think 98 was a great year for GMC.
Must have been.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You made that sound? Do it again. It's almost like car talk. Do it again.
That is the spider. Yeah.
It's the spider.
Yes, I heard it. I heard it.
There you are. Hey, Greg, thanks, man. Appreciate the call. Very quickly before the next break to Jay in Albany. Jay, you're on.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for the answer. Now, my question is about cold weather warm-up. There's a certain weather forecaster on one of the local channels who's talking about a 10-minute warm-up on cold mornings. And all I can think is, what sort of untuned carbureted junker is he driving that needs a 10-minute warm-up? Because as far as I know, a modern fuel-injected car doesn't need much more than 30 seconds on a cold morning.
Well, Jay, you sound a little curmudgeonly, but I certainly dig your point. What do you think, Gordon? Go ahead.
I think the weather person wants to hop into a warm car. I don't think he's concerned about the engine at all.
That's what I think.
Yeah, so the startup warm-up procedure is a tough subject because the car manufacturers say start it, let everything get moving and limbered up 30 seconds to a minute and get going. A, emissions, and B, if it idles way too long, it's extremely inefficient for the engine. Lot of hydrocarbons, unburned hydrocarbons get passed. The oil gets diluted. It's not good to let your car sit outside idling for 20 minutes every morning.
Yeah.
Beautiful to get in nice and warm car. So that's the parallel world of warming it up too little or too long.
Very interesting. Jay, thanks a lot for that one. We're going to go to, before the next break, we'll go to Who's a Tonic. Chris, you're on. Go ahead.
Yeah, Gordon, I have a black Jeep 2016. And I love it, by the way. And I've been having problems with it. The left signal light has been coming on. And then my AC and heat are not blowing out 30 through the car, if you know what I mean, and stuff like that. And then the last question, I don't know if this is serious or not. I see white smoke coming out of my exhaust pipe.
Oh, that's not good. That's not a good thing, Chris. All right, Gordon, we got about 30, 45 seconds or so. Go ahead.
Well, you will get condensation and white smoke out of your tailpipe after a cold start. And the more humid it is, the worse it is, because the air can't soak up that extra moisture. So that may not be a bad thing. I think Ray was getting a little nervous that if maybe you had a head gasket issue.
That's real bad.
That's real bad.
Yeah, buddy.
But I don't know if your Jeep is really susceptible to that. So I don't know if I'd worry about the steam or the smoke. The other question was related to...
turn signal turning on, apparently?
Yeah.
Left-hand turn signal?
If you have a bulb out, it'll flash double time. Is that what's happening? It's flashing too quickly on one turn?
Yeah, that's probably what it's doing.
Then that's probably one bulb somewhere out, and that extra flash is a signal to the driver saying, hey, there's a problem with the directionals. It's probably a failed bulb.
Can you use hand signals and not get a ticket?
You still can, and when you take your driver's test, you still have to know how to use them.
Yeah, just put your arm all the way out, but make sure that no one's coming in the other direction, Chris.
Yeah.
All right, we got to take a break. 800-348-2551. That's the number. And Gordon Fricke's here. We'll be right back. The Boyd, Charlie Parker, My Little Suede Shoes here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Okay, here's one that it's kind of our greatest hits, Gordon. Joel writes in, do you have any suggestions to prevent mice from getting into the engine compartment and chewing on the wiring? I don't have a garage. Most of the products I've seen don't work.
I've heard everything from... The latest one I got, a friend of mine sent me a message and said, hey, what do you think about this? It is a extraordinarily bright light.
Yeah,
that,
maybe.
That turns on when the mice are nearby and it scares them away. And I don't even know if I responded to them. But I've tried the sound evaders and the soap and the dryer sheets and everything. I don't know if anything works. One problem has become an issue in the automotive industry is, and I think it originated in Sweden with Volvo cars, they were trying to figure out how to get petroleum away from the wire insulation to be more environmentally friendly. So they decided to use a soy product.
Ah, delicious.
Yes, you said it. The mice devour those wiring harnesses. And I think there are some wires in other cars that are probably rodent happy than environmentally friendly.
Okay.
And I don't know what the answer is. Traps.
Could you put traps inside the engine compartment?
I have people that ride around with traps in the trunk of their car, and I've seen them under the hood on the cowl areas, too, because they have such a rodent problem.
You know, I'm wondering if you had a loud recording of a cat and just put it under the hood.
That would be excellent. Like when they make that screaming sound.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. We'll workshop that one.
Okay.
This is from Scott. How concerned do I need to be with the TPMS warning light and or tire pressure light? I could tell you they show up in cold weather and they'll go away when it warms up. What's the fix? Any guess at the cost? 2012 Honda Accord.
So if they are going on in cold weather and then they go out after it warms up, I'm thinking the tire pressure is just ragged on the ragged low edge. And what I recommend doing, particularly in cold weather, is go 2 pounds over the sticker that's on your door jamb. So if your car says the recommended air pressure is 32, make them 34, because they're only going to seep down over a period of time. And if we had some scientists out there in the audience, they could probably tell us roughly how much PSI does the tire lose in a given period of time at a given temperature, because it does seep past the rubber.
Remind me of that. The science forum is coming up on Thursday, and I'll forget the question, but that's genius. You know, my car's doing that too. And the problem with the way the information system is on my CTS4 is it says, oh, your left front is out, your or is low, your right front is low, your left rear is low, your right rear is low. They're down a pound or two.
Yeah.
I can't see the odometer. I have no idea how many miles I'm putting on it until I put some air in those tires.
You mean that warning overtakes everything on your instrument panel?
I can't figure out how to get the odometer back.
Go put some air in the tires.
All right. Why don't you do it for me? You're the expert. All right. Let's go to Gardner, and it's Don. You're on.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me okay?
You betcha.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. I hope this is worth your time. I've got a 2006 Honda Pilot. It's actually our second car. It's the one I drive all the time. And it runs really good, you know. But the problem is the check engine light and some other data on there won't go off. So I took it to my mechanic. And, you know, I can't get a safety sticker is what's motivating the whole thing. And he said, well, there's really nothing wrong with the engine. It's just there's something. It's a computer thing. So I spent a couple $100 and he got a computer sensor. And he put a part in there. He said, drive around. He says, if the light goes off, come back and we'll get you a safety sticker. Well, it never went off. And so I took it to the dealership and they said it was something to do with a harness. And that, well, basically they said it'd be about $2,000, $2,500. I'm wondering, I can't really afford to get another car right now. And it's kind of crazy because it drives well, but I can't get a safety sticker because the engine light and the other data stuff that comes up, they used to go off, but I didn't need to get the safety sticker renewed. So I drove around with it. Sometimes that light would come on and then it would go off for long periods of time. Yeah. So, you know, he said, when it goes off, come back in and we'll stick it up and do the safety inspection. Oh. But now it's not going off at all. So yeah. I'm not sure what to do.
Well, the key is what the code is. And there can be, probably 100 or more codes that could come on. And what turns the check engine light on is emission related. That's what the federal government decided to do for emission monitoring. So if the light comes on, it's thought that something could potentially be polluting. So who knows what that is unless you get the code. And if the dealership thinks it's a wiring issue, they either can't pinpoint it, it's vague, and they just don't want to go there. But I couldn't speculate, because if I don't know what the code is, what area of trouble it is, I can guess a thousand times.
Yeah. Thanks, Don. Let's go to North Adams. Roger, you're on. Roger.
Hey, do we have a science forum on Thursday?
I thought so, man, but it's Roger from the science forum.
Okay, that's good.
How you doing? I'm not sure. I'll double check. I'll email you. How you doing, man?
Okay. All right. Hey, Gordon, I've got a 2015 Jeep Wrangler Sport, and every time I walk around the front of it, I got an antifreeze smell.
Mm.
Now, I pressure tested it. I don't run out of antifreeze. It doesn't run low coolant.
Uh-oh. I think you're in a bad spot, Roger. He doesn't run out of any coolant, so are you still there? We lost Roger.
I think I know what we're talking about, though. He's not going through coolant. He can't find a leak, but he's getting a odor or a smell.
Yeah.
And that is not uncommon.
Right.
Are you there? Okay.
Sorry.
So no leaks. You can't see it. Are you adding much of anything to it?
None. Zero.
It is. You do believe it's a coolant smell?
Oh, it's definitely antifreeze. It's the sweet antifreeze smell.
Yeah.
Definitely antifreeze.
So this is what you can do in a case like that. There is a product that is actually sold and marketed through Subaru dealers, and it's made by a company called Holtz, H-O-L-T-Z. I think it's in England. And Subaru approves this. They call it a cooling system conditioner. And it's actually a type of sealant, but it is harmless. It doesn't plug anything up. It doesn't do anything to passages in your engine. I don't know if you can buy it at auto parts stores, but you can buy it at any Subaru dealer.
Interesting.
And I put this in a lot of cars for those very reasons, that if there's no visible leak and or just it's an extremely slow add, maybe every couple thousand miles, I would try it, and you're going to want to pour it into the radiator or make sure you're in the pressure part of the cooling system, not the plastic overflow tank. The bottle, it'll tell you how much it's good for. Is yours the V6 engine?
No, four-cylinder.
All right, so maybe just one bottle will do. It's not very expensive stuff. I would follow the instructions, shake it up, put it in, do everything the way they explain, and just see what happens. And so it may just go away.
It's head gasket going?
No, probably not. It's probably a minor seep at maybe the tank of the radiator where it's crimped and there's an O-ring in there, and it's steaming, but so slightly it doesn't amount to anything other than the smell.
Right.
All right, Roger.
Right. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Hey, man, I'll let you know about the science forum. I wish I knew. You know what? I make these schedules so far in advance. Sergio's in Colony. Sergio. Oh, hey, man, can you turn the radio down a little bit? Oh, Serge.
Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Want to say, first of all, thank you, Gordon, for all the years of all the shows. I've learned a lot from you.
You're welcome.
I have a 2014 Ford Explorer, and I have a light going on for my windshield washer fluid. Everything I've seen as far as, you know, online, et cetera, basically they're saying to me I have to take the bumper off of my car to get to it. I'm very fortunate. I have a son who has no problem taking things apart, and he's really good with cars. Is there any suggestion that you might be able to make to get to that thing somehow without having to take the bumper off?
Well,
thank you.
I just encountered a Volvo the other day with a leaking windshield washer tank. That is probably along the same lines as your Ford. It requires bumper cover removal and some plastic work around the inner fender. I was fortunate enough to raise this car up and take a little plastic access panel down and find the crack in the reservoir and fix it in the car. So before you guys tear the nose apart, maybe there is access to where that sensor is located, and it doesn't require taking the bumper off to get to it. I don't know on that Explorer how visible the washer motor and that level sensor is. This particular Volvo, you could change both washer motors and the level sensor without taking the tank out of the car.
Okay.
Thank you for your help. Definitely try that before you tear that thing to pieces.
Thanks, Sergio. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551. And remember, you know, if we go to you, and there are a ton of calls, and so it's not a sure thing, but if we go to you, make sure you turn that radio down. It really helps out a lot. This email from Peter. Any knowledge whether any car dealers or other entities lease used or pre-owned vehicles? Do you have an opinion on whether leasing a used vehicle, hopefully at a much lower price than a new vehicle, would be a good idea?
There was talk about that happening at some point here and there, but I don't think anybody leases used cars.
No?
No, I don't think so. Once they go off the lease, then it goes into the off-lease market, and the dealers, you know, resell them the traditional way.
Yeah.
So I don't think there is an avenue for that.
All right. It looks like Larry in Great Barrington's been waiting over half an hour. Larry, go ahead.
Hey there. I have a 2011 Honda Pilot, and I've got a power steering leak. I keep having to add power steering fluid. I parked it on snow the other day and turned the wheel here and there, and I don't see what the leak is, where the leak is. Any ideas?
Well, it's not that uncommon for that vintage Pilot. How many miles are on the car?
260.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not out of the question that the leak is coming from the steering rack and the fluid.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. Excuse me for interrupting, but I've got a 2006 Honda Element, and I had to change the steering rack on that one.
Yeah.
All of a sudden they get another one.
What can be the cause is if the seals on the rack start to leak, the fluid first goes into those bellows type boots that protects the steering inner tie rod, and they can collect quite a bit of fluid before it gets out. So people, you can have a case where you've poured a pint of fluid in it and never see a drop of it out yet because it hasn't gotten through the boots yet. I'm not saying you need a steering rack, but it's not uncommon and out of the questions, particularly since you don't see any drips anywhere.
No. I did buy this product that says guaranteed to stop all leaks. It's power steering stop leak.
You can try
it. It didn't seem to work.
It did not?
No, it hasn't worked.
Get your money back.
Larry, thanks a lot and good luck. Racks are not cheap to fix.
No, they're not.
I've had them replaced.
They're ugly.
Yeah, really bad. Bethany in Wineskill. Bethany, you're on.
Oh, hey, thanks for taking the call. I've got a 2015 Subaru Outback, and the last couple months I've been hearing a clunking when I'm going over, like, bumps, and it's not all the time. It's actually, like, when I'm going slower, it's like clunk, 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 and I've had had it checked out twice at a garage. Once they changed the stabilizer bar, and then my husband Googled and thought it was a spring kit, so we had the spring kit changed, but it's still happening.
Do you hear it from the front of the vehicle?
I think it's from the front of the vehicle.
What I see a lot of in that vintage Subaru are front lower ball joints. Very common wear and tear item. We replace lots of them, and sometimes they get overlooked. And if a mechanic shakes the wheel a certain way, you'll discover a lot of play and wear. And if you shake it the other way, you won't discover any. You have to shake it like you're checking a tie rod, not a ball joint. But they will give you a rattle through various bumps, and it's not an uncommon replacement item. How many miles are on your car?
113,000.
If those are the original ball joints, and you're not on really and you're not on really good roads, if you do some streets with bumps or back roads, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if you got a ball joint going. Maybe both. It's not uncommon.
Yeah, well, that's another repair.
Okay. Going back into the shop, so mention that.
See
what they
say.
All right, thanks a lot. We don't have time for another call here, alas, but this email from Andrew. All right, here's one for you to ponder in the last 40 seconds. What make, model, and year would you suggest is the easiest car to fix and tinker with yourself?
1965 Pontiac Le Mans.
Stop
you
it.
Knew I was
going to
say that, didn't
stop
you?
Stop that. You hurt me when you say that.
That's a very tough question. Yeah. You know, they say the older they are, the easier they are to work on. Yeah, they're mechanical. There's less electronics or no electronics, no computers. They have their mechanical glitches and weird things to fix, but the Asian market, Japanese particularly, they've been making the most reliable cars.
Right.
And they're pretty fix-friendly in most cases. Even the Korean cars.
Even new ones?
Even the newer ones are sometimes more mechanic-friendly than some of the other makes and models. I think they want you to be able to fix their cars so they get a good reputation and they sell more of them.
Fair enough. Hey, Gordon Fricke, we're done.
All right.
We'll see you next month.
Thanks.
Have a great Christmas and everything
you
else.
You too.
I got to start my shopping. Well, I got a couple weeks before I have
I'm
going to
start right now after the show.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Support comes from Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales service and installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators, serving the greater Capital District for over 40 years. AmbroseLEC.com. Mohawk Valley Art Shop in Schenectady's Stockade District, a community for art enthusiasts, art supplies, and art classes for all creative levels, featuring a gallery of local artist works, MohawkValleyArt.com. And the Arkell Museum at Canajo Harry, featuring work by American artists, including Gilbert Stuart, Winslow Homer, Child Hassam, and William Merritt Chase, ArkellMuseum.org. Well, once again, thanks to Gordon Fricke for being here. Thank you for calling. Listen, from beginning to end, the lines were loaded. I apologize if we didn't get to your call or your email. Gordon's a popular dude. He'll be back again next month. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Eddie Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Pets und Vets with Chris Dallas and Susan Ciculli. See you tomorrow at 2.